This is Salil Tripathi from the Institute for Human Rights and Business, and I'm speaking using FaceTime with Professor Gilles Carbonnier. He is a professor at the Graduate Institute of International and Development Studies in Geneva, and we have known each other for a long time. He used to work with the International Committee for the Red Cross and Red Crescent, and we did a lot of work together on human rights in conflict about 10 years ago. So it's wonderful to talk to you, Gilles, again. You have written, of course, this book called Humanitarian Economics, War, Disaster, and the Global Aid Market. Can you briefly tell us what humanitarian economics means?
Indeed, humanitarian economics, when I presented this title to many experts working in humanitarian crisis, I would say that all of them said, oh, this is a good idea to have a book on humanitarian economics, but I noticed that each of them would describe and define humanitarian economics differently. So the way I describe it is actually that humanitarian economics covers a field that is concerned with the economic dimensions and the political economy of humanitarian crisis. And when I say humanitarian crisis, I mean situations of war and disaster, and I include humanitarian responses as embedded in war economies and disaster economies.
Now, the whole rationale of economics is, you know, costs and benefits, that you may have unlimited wants, but the means to use are usually limited and limited by costs. Humanitarian needs are, of course, mind-boggling. It's not just disasters like the earthquake in Chile last week and the tsunami, but the refugee crisis that's going on now. All these are natural or man-made disasters, and the global aid market plays a big role in that. How do you assign costs and benefits when human lives are involved?
First, economists, we tend to analyze humanitarian crisis in terms of costs and benefits. And also, we assume that individuals are self-interested and behave in a rational manner to maximize, well-being, pleasure, and minimize pain. And this actually raises, studying the humanitarian crisis, raises a number of challenges for economists and other social scientists, because we have to factor into our analysis the role of emotions, for instance, resentment, hatred, fear, but also the role of altruism and non-altruism in particular, which is the fuel that actually drives the humanitarian impulse, the impulse to respond. So this is the first challenge that really I address in my book, to say, well, what are the epistemological tensions when we economists try to apply our tools and methods to help understand the humanitarian crisis? And then the second issue is indeed applying cost-benefit analysis is important, because when you have, situations where groups that are designated as terrorists are operating, you have, of course, situations where a lot of people suffer, there is destruction, so you have costs. But you have also benefits. You have people involved in financing armed groups. You have people involved actually in drawing benefit from situations of crisis, and it is critical that we understand that dimensions in order to improve the understanding of how humanitarian responses fit into this picture.
Businesses also have a role in disaster situations. They provide electricity and water to civilians during conflict. If a town has been leveled, you need construction companies to help remove debris. So businesses have services to offer. What can business learn from humanitarian economics as it sets about performing these roles? Because this is not simply about profit and loss. This is about something beyond profit and loss. I mean, the example that's often cited is about how after the Hurricane Katrina hit the United States, better work was done in providing disaster relief by companies like Walmart than what the U.S. disaster agency was able to do at that time. And, you know, agencies like Red Cross have routinely worked with the private sector. So what is it that business can offer in terms of its own human rights responsibilities? And what can it learn from the sector?
I think businesses have a lot to offer and can also learn a lot in terms of improving their due diligence when operating in situations of war and disaster. And this is what humanitarian economics brings to the fore. First, when we say business, we really have to do away with this kind of unitary vision of business as a monolithic entity. Actually, as you very well know, businesses can play a whole range of different roles mm-hmm. and influence in situations of armed conflicts, all the way from being perpetrators of violation of international humanitarian law and human rights, to being part of the solution, to being part of technological innovations and improvement in the delivery of assistance and in ways to improve the protection. We can take the example of the insurance sector. You have a lot of entry points, for instance, when it comes to insuring disaster risks and providing health insurance, disaster loss insurance, with microinsurance schemes or with other risk-linked securities that may be useful to cover risks and actually to transfer risks outside of the country which is hit by a disaster.
Right.
So there we see a lot of potential for engagement, but at the same time, you have other type of insurance products such as kidnap and ransom insurance coverage. And I do think that this type of insurance coverage that actually cover all the costs related with the release of kidnapped workers in conflict zones
mm-hmm.
are extremely detrimental because they do increase the price of kidnappees.
That's what people have talked about, creating a moral hazard in economic terms by creating a perverse incentive and even promoting reckless behavior. Because if you have this kind of insurance available, companies which are less concerned about, you know, adhering to human rights standards will take the risk and go, as we know very well from many conflict zones.
Absolutely, Salil. This is the typical moral hazard issue. And even if there are a number of measures that have been taken so that in principle, the staff of such companies are not aware or should not be aware that the company has contracted an insurance coverage, actually, this automatically results in a greater appetite for risk, for taking risks, and for less exposure for the company to the consequences of kidnapping incidents. So this is quite a telling example of a sector, the insurance sector, which can provide new products and services that can be extremely useful in situations, certain situations of disasters, especially with weather-indexed insurance, and can, on the other hand, have detrimental impact in other situations.
Right. As you look forward, do you expect business and humanitarian sectors to have better understanding of each other? And do you see the need for a new framework, new rules? How do you expect them to operate?
I see a lot of improvement in terms of understanding. I remember when I started to work as economic advisor with the International Committee of the Red Cross in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
To be an economic advisor with a humanitarian organization was seen as something, you know, hardly anyone would really understand what it's all about. And we started engaging businesses on two fronts. One front was to make them aware of their responsibility under international humanitarian law. And the other was to see with other companies how far we, to what extent we were able to establish partnerships that would enhance humanitarian outcomes. And what I think where we have done some advances, some progresses, is in framing the terms of exchanges. In particular, first and foremost, with regards to the ethical guidelines or the framework in which this partnership can be established, which have to respect basic tenets of normative fits, normative adequacy, but have also to be transparent in terms of procedural arrangements. And at the end of the day, what is also a legitimating factor is whether it improves humanitarian effects and impacts in the field or not. And I must say that this is still where a lot of research has to go, because most of the partnerships we have seen emerging over the past decade haven't been really measured in terms of, you know, how much did this really improve the overall humanitarian response.
Right.
And this is the proof of the cake is in the pudding, is in the eating.
No, absolutely. And what you say has also a broader lesson for human rights in general, which is to sharpen its own economic thinking about how economics can help human rights and how the two are not spread apart. Because as a student of economics myself, I've often found that the two streams talk as if they are parallel to each other and not meeting. So your book is a very signal contribution. I'm really glad it's come out, and I wish it all the best, and I hope more and more people read it. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Sarin.